Welcome to Sacrilegious Discourse.
For this is what the Sovereign Lord says.
Why do you need prophets to tell people who you are and what you want?
If you can justify everything that the God of the Bible has done, then you can justify any of your behavior.
A lot of this mentality is trickling into what is now mainstream right-wing Christianity.
I am capable of empathy greater than this God of the Bible.
This is a Bible that they tell kids. This is the good Lord. This is the good book. He is fantasizing about murder, mass murder.
Head over to sacrilegiousdiscourse.com right now to find out how to leave us a review or support us on Patreon.
Husband!
Wife!
Do you know what we're doing today?
Well, last time we did Matthew chapters 11 and 12 Q&A.
Correct.
Yes, and sure as fuck Jesus did. Has a lot to say. So we had to break down the Q&A into two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that today we're finishing that up. So we're actually doing
Q&A chapter 13 of Little Maddie,
where he had so much to say.
He had so many parables.
So many words.
All the parables.
That's all the red. And so, yeah, we're basically just finishing up the Q&A.
Yeah.
Which is about 3 hours, two and a half, three hours of Q&A. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know, countering Jesus's words. Not that we're countering them. We are, because they're wrong, but sometimes.
Well, trying to figure out what the fuck Matthew meant and what the fuck Jesus meant and how the fuck that relates to the Old Testament and how it gets used today. Like,
yeah,
it's a lot.
It's certainly not as straightforward as Christians like to present it. How's that?
Right.
Anyway, so today we're going to be doing the Q&A for Matthew chapter 13.
Correct.
Are you ready to get started?
Sure as fuck am.
Let's do this.
Okie dokie. All right, let us hop into this chapter 13 Q&A from Little Maddie.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
This is one of the more important chapters in Matthew.
Okay.
Because it's the first long collection of just boom, 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 several of Jesus's parables.
Right, right.
Like, yeah. One after the other.
Yeah.
Like, he lays it down. He's got a lot to say.
Yeah, he's got a plethora of parables.
A plethora of parables. That's fun. I have a plethora of penguins.
Do you?
No, oh, not at all.
I was like, I don't. I mean, you have a plethora of strawberries.
I do. I love strawberries. They're my favorite. One of the major themes in chapter 13 is that the kingdom of heaven arrives quietly, grows gradually, is often hidden, and is frequently misunderstood. Okay?
Yeah.
That's what all the parables kind of coalesce around.
Yeah.
That would have been very surprising to the Jews of that time, because they expected God's kingdom to arrive super dramatically through military victory, divine judgment, or national restoration.
I mean, you would think like an action of God would be very distinct, right?
Yeah.
Like you would know this act. That's kind of part of my argument. Like, mm-hmm. Wouldn't you know if God's doing something? Like, because sometimes he did things in the Old Testament where
the Old Testament
God, you could definitely tell because he's like, you know, killing 186,000
people. And everybody
people
at once saw it with their eyeballs.
Whatever, you know, a pair. Hypothetically.
Yeah.
Hypothetically.
I mean, they didn't have cameras back then, so
right,
I don't know what
yeah.
they saw.
No, yeah, exactly.
But
most of the time, it felt like they were taking a military victory and saying, that was God, or a military defeat.
Sure
saying,
as fuck was.
That was God.
That was God.
Right, yeah.
My God. Oh, I got a rock. Matthew 13 is a goldmine for historical, literary, and cultural observations because it's one of the clearest windows into how the early Jesus movement understood itself.
Okay.
So that kind of adds an interesting layer.
Yeah.
I think that's what I've been trying to get at. That
right.
It gives that one more reason that we still have to read it and look at it.
Sure.
You know?
Sure. Yeah.
Matthew chapter 13 may reflect the church's disappointment is one of the points.
Okay.
One fascinating scholarly interpretation is that the chapter addresses a problem that emerged after Jesus's death.
Of course.
If Jesus was the Messiah, why weren't more people convinced?
I've had the same question thus far. So,
Yeah. Well, that's apparently a big question among scholars.
As it should be, I think.
Yeah. Like, what the fuck?
Right.
People? Yeah. The parable of the sower provides an answer to this, kind of.
Mm.
Some people never listen. Some are enthusiastic but fall away. Some are distracted by life, and only some persevere.
Okay.
In other words, the existence of unbelievers doesn't disprove the message. And the parable helps explain why the movement remained relatively small despite its extraordinary claims.
Mm, so. I have a hard time with that because, again, miracles, right? Right. Like, okay. They're claiming extraordinary things.
Yeah.
Right? They're claiming things that are extraordinary. Now, in our research,
the proof is on you.
Right. In our research and even in the reading of the Bible itself, mm-hmm. it doesn't seem as extraordinary as they claim them to be based on what else is going on in that time frame.
Right.
But you would think that if you are the Son of God, you would be doing extraordinary things. But it just doesn't read that way.
It really doesn't.
So it's off. Something's off.
Something ain't right. Chapter 13 is also obsessed with delayed judgment.
Mm-hmm.
So this would have been really frustrating to the people of the time that would be expecting immediate divine intervention.
Sure.
This pattern repeats. We get the parable, and then later the judgment happens. So there's the parable of the wheat and weeds, but Jesus says in that, don't worry, they'll get separated at harvest time.
Right.
The parable of the net, the dragnet, don't worry, they'll get separated, the good fish from the bad fish, after fishing. The mustard seed, don't worry about it. You can't tell them apart at the time of the seed, but
it'll turn into a large tree.
You'll know what's good and what's not
sure.
after growth.
Right.
And then with the yeast, you won't, like, once it's mixed in, you won't be able to tell what's what until after fermentation.
Okay.
Okay?
Sure.
So the message of these is patience, wait.
Got it.
Okay?
Yeah.
God's kingdom isn't going to arrive all at once, and that theme becomes especially important when the expected apocalypse fails to arrive imminently.
Well, yeah, I think this is why this feels a little after the fact, mm-hmm. because much of what we've read from Jesus thus far seems very imminent. Like, the things that are happening are going to be coming soon.
Right.
Very soon, right?
Yeah.
And it feels like this is just kind of them putting it off for down the road.
Yeah, this chapter is very interesting for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The kingdom, quote unquote, is surprisingly non-political in speech, given what else is happening.
Okay.
Because many first century Jews would have expected a Messiah who would defeat Rome, restore Israel, establish political sovereignty.
Okay.
Like, they were looking for that kind of movement.
Yeah.
This guy was just like a prophet like anybody else on the street corners,
sure,
basically.
Sure.
Almost every kingdom image in Matthew 13 is agricultural.
Yeah.
Like, he's speaking to the blue-collar workers instead of the leaders.
Right. Right.
He's talking about seeds and weeds and wheat, yeast, fishing nets, that kind of stuff.
He's tailored his message.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
So they're like, what?
He's a carpenter, so he's crafted his message. Sorry.
Yeah. For a movement that is centered on a Messiah, the imagery is remarkably devoid of any military conquests.
Sure.
Which, that's what they were looking for.
Right.
The immediacy, that kind of thing.
Maybe he just doesn't have the followers for it yet.
But that's why John the Baptist from jail was like, you know, what is happening right now?
Yeah.
Are you really? Because that's not what I thought was going to happen.
Sure.
I thought you were coming in with swords blazing and you're over here talking about fucking metaphorical sword.
So really, John the Baptist kind of acts as a antagonist to Jesus and like making him answer for the things that people are questioning a little bit, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, he represents, like, the everyman.
Got it.
Like, the audience.
Okay.
Going, I don't know what's happening. This doesn't seem right. And that, you know, gives Jesus the time and space to answer. It's not about that. It's
about the mustard seeds.
Yeah, yeah. That's one reason that historians often distinguish between Jesus's vision, mm-hmm. like what he's talking about right now, versus later revolutionary messianic movements.
Okay.
So we're going to see a difference.
Got it.
Okay. Matthew quietly elevates ordinary labor in this chapter, particularly. We get a lot of farmers, laborers, fishermen, bakers, merchants.
Sure.
Those kind of, like blue I collar. Said, blue-collar yeah, worker yeah, guys.
Right.
There's no kings, no generals, no priests. Like, he's not doing the political thing.
Right.
Which is really interesting, because even so, he's pissing off the political leaders.
Right. A lot of this really ties back to, like, how I kind of feel like Trump won his mm-hmm. presidencies. He spoke very much to the blue-collar workers, and that's how he got risen up and
yeah.
stature, you know, like it all in the wrong ways. But like, that's why we've made some, you know, connections between
some negative comparisons
versus, now. Yeah. And not in a good way, but you right. know, it's definitely, I can see the tie.
The parallels are right. definitely existent,
which is interesting, you know,
it
like
really
because,
is.
Because it makes it more, it makes this whole thing with Jesus kind of like you can kind of see it in a political light, even though
yeah.
they didn't necessarily see it then because of who he's catering to.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So
it's like you can see it in your mind's eye how it could have gone because you have seen how it went.
Right.
Today.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And that's sad. Because
it's sad. Sad. It's the saddest.
It's the saddest. But it kind of... gives you pause when you think, oh, and that lasted 2,000 years.
Don't say things like that. Don't say things like that.
But I mean, like, how can I not?
Right.
It's so depressing.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't even want to think about that.
The stupidity will never die. It just keeps being there. God damn it. But the kingdom in this chapter is constantly and consistently explained through the work of these ordinary people.
Sure.
And that is kind of easy to miss because we're used to having read all this.
Yeah.
And we're just like, yeah, and then. But think about like the histories that we read in the Old Testament. We were only dealing with, for the most part,
yeah.
Prophets that were like already political leaders in the church.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
And kings.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
this is a difference.
It is.
It doesn't feel that different because it's all the same people to us, like, you know, those old people back then.
Right.
It feels like it's just more the same, but it's really not. It's a huge difference.
Yeah, no, it is. And because of when these books were actually written, mm-hmm. he was kind of risen to the stature after the fact. Like, they were like, hey, mm-hmm. let's make him more important, essentially. Like,
let's make him the king.
Right, yeah. So, like, a lot of this is just, again, we've talked about it. A lot of this is backfilling
yeah.
information so that it all fits and make him, his stature higher than what it maybe was.
Yep. All right, so let's get into the chapter itself, though. I just wanted to kind of open with, here's what we're actually talking about in this chapter.
Right.
But let's get into the verses.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
So we open with Jesus teaching his parables, and we get a simple story about a farmer and sowing seeds.
Sure.
Right? The parable of the sower.
Yeah.
And Jesus explains that the seed is God's message, and the soils are different types of listeners, different types of people hearing the message.
Sure, like throwing it on the rock and on the whatever. Like, he mentioned a bunch of different things.
Yeah, the sharp things. What are those sharp things
Thorns.
Called? Thorns. I was like, icicles, no. Needles, no. Yeah. Cactus, no.
I think I probably told the story a long time ago, but I was in Scouts when I was younger, which I'm sure a lot of our listeners know. But we were working on a project for it was called Order of the Arrow. Okay.
Order and of the
it's
Arrow.
It's a secret. It's a secret. Don't tell anybody, guys. It's a secret group inside of Boy Scouts that is. Ooh. You get elected to these positions to this group by your troop, and I was the person that went for my troop, and we have to do a project where you do community service, but you aren't allowed to talk when you're doing this whole. Like, it's like 3 or 4 days, maybe a week. I can't remember how long it was. But you weren't allowed to talk during the whole thing. Well, we were cleaning a dam, like a water dam. And one of the kids that was with us, we were up on the side of this dam, and he fell off the side. But off the side, there was a huge thorn bush with, like, the thorns were, like, about 1.5 inches long each.
Jesus!
So we spent about 3 seconds going, oh.
What do I?
And not, like, not talking, and they were like, and then we just turned to our leaders and were like, help! Like, fuck this shit. Like, he's sitting, he's surrounded by 1.5 inches. Yeah, he's stabbed multiple times just for falling off. Like, Jesus Christ. This is not good.
And you actually looked at each other to decide, do we break the vow of silence?
We're not supposed to talk, you know?
You were taking it so seriously.
Well, we were, yeah. I mean, it was very serious to us, you know, at the time. So, I mean, but obviously we have to help our friend. So.
Did you still win the arrow or whatever?
Yeah, yeah. So I got you get a sash and, you know.
Did you have to go an extra day?
No.
You were like, times.
Yeah, we're like, we need help, guys. Sorry, the thorns reminded me of that. Sorry.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
So the obvious lesson here is that people are going to respond differently to the same message.
Yeah.
And the disciples, his students, mm-hmm. they believe Jesus is the Messiah, yet most religious leaders reject him. And many people follow him only for the miracles.
Sure.
And some disciples are already drifting away. And, like, they were hangers-on on the edge of the crowd, and then they kind of left.
Okay.
And then there are entire towns ignoring him.
Especially, like, the ones where he killed all the pigs.
Yeah.
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 Right.
So the disciples, his students, might naturally ask, if Jesus is really God's chosen one, why isn't everyone accepting him?
Yeah.
This don't make sense.
I still, regardless of the answer to this, I still have problems with that. So.
No, totally. Totally. I agree. But Jesus answers that question with this parable. He's saying the problem is not the seed. The problem is not the message.
Right.
The message is good. The varying results come from the conditions of the hearers. He's like, not my fault. I can only tell you the words.
Sure. You got to blame the person listening to you, not yourself.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Exactly.
And if we learned anything from Trump, that's how it goes.
No, totally. it's reminiscent of less funny, but it's reminiscent of a domestic abuse situation where a husband is, say, beating his wife and saying, why are you making me do this?
Right.
I'm not responsible for my anger or, what's happening to you.
Right. Well, there's something, I forget what it was. Some Christians believe that at some point in what we've discussed already in Matthew, there was a point where God hardened people's hearts so they wouldn't do. I can't remember what it was about, but mm-hmm. we've discussed that already.
Yeah.
And it's like, but okay, but he's also in the past. God has opened people's hearts to things, you know? So, like, why would he's got he's Jesus so, on earth right now?
He's
right?
So wishy-washy.
Right.
It don't make no sense.
Why don't you show them your God? Make them understand. Let's make this a real movement. Let's you know, like, you have God powers, dude.
Right.
Just if you have God powers, do God power shit, you know? And I know you don't like to prove when somebody's asking you, but, like, you could just
sometimes you do though.
But sometimes you do. Yeah. Not like as a test, but, like, you could just show them. You could just be God, because you are.
Wouldn't it be
cool apparently.
If it was simple?
Like, right?
It could be so easy, but right. No.
Yeah,
we gotta make it hard.
But you know, it's all tests. It's all. You gotta be tested. So.
So in other words, failure of reception does not mean failure of truth. Is what we're supposed to get out of that parable.
I don't like that message.
No, I don't either. I really but don't. That would have been enormously reassuring to his disciples.
Sure. Sure. No, and yeah.
And explain why people are leaving.
It solidifies your base.
Yeah.
But it doesn't do much for anybody else. So.
Yeah. When other people don't get it, it's because they don't get it.
Right.
You're special because you do
right.
get it.
And that's a great message for people who already follow him, right? It makes them feel above, makes them feel special, makes them feel better about themselves and their choice to follow Jesus.
Well, it's like, especially if you are telling them ahead of time, here are the things that you're going to hear, and you're pre-feeding them all the negativity that they might come across, so that when they come across it, they are like,
they have an answer.
you aren't a fan of Jesus because XYZ. Yeah. I already know.
No, that's if you ever talk to a Christian nowadays,
they have
a litany of answers as to why you're going to say this or you're going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
Like they are fed these answers to them in their church services, in their Bible studies, whatever they're doing. They're fed these answers so that they can go out there and defend their faith against people who might question it.
Yeah. And if I don't get it, it's my fault.
Right.
It's not God's fault. He's made it perfectly clear.
Right.
I must be the piece of shit that just doesn't get it.
And they don't need a coherent answer for you. They just need a coherent answer for themselves.
Yeah.
Like that's the only thing that really is required with regard to them defending their faith is that they believe themselves.
Right.
They don't need to convince you.
Exactly.
And it's
circular logic.
It's a malicious way to act in the world, in my opinion. Like you should never be that person, but there are a lot of people like that.
Yep. So then we move on and we get Jesus speaking to us about the reason that he's speaking in parables.
Okay. All right.
So I'm going to read verses 13, 14, and 15. Okay.
I got to say one thing before you start. We had somebody comment on Spotify that they love the way that you're turning the pages and it just sounds like a professor's.
Oh my God. That's so funny because I have to print out my notes. Because when I read from my notes on my phone, sometimes my thumb, like I fat thumb my phone and I scroll too far and I lose my place.
Yeah, we've actually had to edit podcasts because you scrolled way too far.
And I'm like, God damn it. And other times, like when I'm trying to scroll back, I somehow accidentally like delete what I'm trying to read and I have to undo. And I'm terrified that somehow I'm going to not be able to undo.
Sure.
So I'm like, fuck this. As soon as I'm done with my notes, I just fucking print them.
But wife's good. She reuses all the notes and reprints on the back of them for the new episodes.
I do.
Yeah. So we're very ecological about our
note
printing.
Yeah. I hate the waste of the ink and paper.
Sure.
But what can I do?
Right.
But I'm glad that my page flipping sounds scholarly. It's not. It's because I'm klutzy and stupid.
Oh, come on.
Honestly.
You do a lot of research on these things. You actually do a really good job. Sometimes to the point where
you're annoyed.
I'm bored and annoyed.
Yeah.
But like you give an immense and great amount of information about this. I mean, do a really great job.
Honestly, it feeds some of my mental illnesses because I get to go down rabbit holes. Like, and reining me in is a problem, but I'm so interested in what I'm reading.
Sure.
And I'm very enthusiastic. And I just want you to be as enthusiastic as I am. So I'm like, I get to share what I learned. Guess what I learned?
Right.
And so, it's cool to me. All right. But we're going to read verses 13, 14, and 15.
Okay.
Okay.
Sorry.
This is why I speak to them in parables, says Jesus, in red ink.
Yeah.
Not on my page, but in the Bible, it's in red.
Sure.
Though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not understand. In them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah. You will be ever hearing, but never understanding. You will be ever seeing, but never perceiving. For this people's heart has become calloused.
That's what you were talking about. Yeah. Right.
They hardly hear with their ears, and they have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn, and I would heal them.
Mm.
Okay.
If only you could just be better, I would fix you. But since you're not, I'm not going to.
It's not my fault as a God that you're a piece of shit. What? Did you literally just hear the words that you said?
Like, your dad made all of us, dude. Like, I'm sorry, but, you know.
Yeah. Such bullshit.
Right.
But you notice he quotes from what he says, as it has been said in Isaiah, right?
Yeah.
So this came from Isaiah chapter 6. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to read verses 1 through 13.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
Because it's all relevant.
Yeah.
Okay? In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphim, each with 6 wings. With 2 wings, they covered their faces. With 2, they covered their feet. And with 2, they were flying. And they were calling to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty. The whole earth is full of his glory." At the sound of their voices, the doorposts and thresholds shook, and the temple was filled with smoke. "Woe to me," I cried. "I am ruined, for I am a man of unclean lips, and I live among a people of unclean lips, and my eyes have seen the King, the Lord Almighty." Then one of the seraphim flew to me with a live coal in his hand, which he had taken with tongs from the altar. With it, he touched my mouth and said, "See, this has touched your lips. Your guilt is taken away and your sin atoned for." Then I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" And I said, "Here I am, send me." He said, "Go and tell his people, be ever hearing, but never understanding, be ever seeing, but never perceiving. Make the heart of this people calloused, make their ears dull, and close their eyes. Otherwise, they might see with their eyes, hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn and be healed." Then I said, "For how long, Lord?" And he answered, "Until the cities lie ruined and without inhabitant, until the houses are left deserted and the fields ruined and ravaged, until the Lord has sent everyone far away and the land is utterly forsaken. And though a tenth remains in the land," you know, the remnant,
yeah,
"it will again be laid waste. But as the terebinth and oak leaf stumps, when they are cut down, so the holy seed will be the stump in the land."
Okay, so and I'm probably maybe slightly off of this, but like there was a lot of the prophets covered time periods that were very bad for the Israelites, where mm-hmm. they got conquered, where they got, you know, destroyed or something like that.
Yep.
And they needed reasons for these things. This is describing something in the Old Testament, I'm quite certain, that was happening that was bad to the Israelites.
Yes.
And they needed a reason why only 10% are going to be left to reseed Israel, right?
Exactly.
And that's really all this is.
Yeah.
It's a backfilled explanation as to why shitty things happened to the Israelites.
Yes. Yes, that is exactly what happened. And so I'm going to read you what I learned. Okay. This chapter of Isaiah contains Isaiah's vision of God in the temple. The prophet sees heavenly beings crying, "Holy, holy, holy." Then God commissions Isaiah to preach to the Israelites.
Yeah.
But God tells him something shocking. The people will hear but not understand. Mm. Bummer. Mm-hmm. Historically, Isaiah was preaching to the kingdom of Judah after a period of political crisis and spiritual corruption. Mm. So the point was, the people's hearts are already hardened, and Isaiah's message will expose that hardness.
Okay.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So the tragic irony is that the more Isaiah warns them, the more their stubbornness becomes evident. And so Jesus takes that same message and applies that same pattern to his ministry. He sees himself as another prophet speaking to a people who largely refuse to hear him.
And again, I think that, you know, based on our experience right now in this time period with Trump and the way that he speaks similarly, mm-hmm. right, where you build from your base up, right? That's a good way to build a base. You get mm-hmm. you get very diehard fans, diehard people that are ready to do anything for you because they're like, "I'm part of this group." And
cult building, you mean?
Cult building, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. And it's just a way to build fanaticism for your, mm-hmm. your cause. That's all this is.
And the more that we don't understand, the more special is the one who does.
Right. So there is no, you can't win against this argument. Right?
No, there are actual support groups and books and entire focuses on how to deal with people who are in cults.
Yeah.
And the more facts that you present them with, the more that it actually backfires and turns them back toward the cult.
Right. Because like, they'll start rejecting even more facts. The more facts you throw at them, they'll start rejecting more facts.
And they will double down and go harder.
Right. So it sends them in a spiraling downward. It sends them in a downward spiral of rejecting basically reality.
Yeah.
And then it forces them to become this hardened groupie because of whatever group they're fucking following.
You're forcing them to choose. Right. And so when they choose hard.
Right, right.
With their teeth and every fiber of their being.
Right. No, it's dangerous. It's a dangerous tactic that people use to control people and manipulate people.
And that's why America was not prepared for this Trump cult.
So true. So true.
Because, I mean, all of us are like, how do we deal with, you know, our Aunt Deborah at Thanksgiving? How do we deal with our Uncle Tony?
Yeah.
You know, at cutting the turkey and talking about whatever MAGA thing he's talking about.
Yeah. Like, the answer is we've been dealing with these same things for the entirety of human civilization.
Right. Right.
And unfortunately, most of the time, there's not a great answer. Usually,
you could laugh it off because they were just old, stupid people, right? And you only see them on Thanksgiving and at Easter and maybe a couple times during the summer.
Right.
And you can just live through it, right?
Yeah.
But we were not prepared for those people to actually join up into a club.
Right.
And to get on Facebook and reinforce each other.
Right. Yeah.
We were not prepared for the boomer coalition of Trumpsters.
Yeah. Social media really fueled this whole thing that's happening now.
Yeah.
And you know, I would say that with regard to the old with the New Testament, that, you know, I know some things that happen later. So but it gets fueled by politics there as well in some regards. Mm-hmm. Like the reason that it is what it is today is we'll find out eventually is because of some politics that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just interesting how it all kind of comes back to that same central thing.
Yeah.
You know?
It's human psychology.
Right. Yeah.
And you can be on the outside looking at it and point right at it and go, oh, it's that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't help you.
No. Yeah.
It's just depressing.
If you
honestly
care to understand, it does help you understand it at the very least.
Yeah. Which I appreciate because I always feel like I'm on the outside looking in at humanity and trying to understand what humanity is fucking doing.
Right. Right.
And so, yeah, it helps me, but it's also depressing because it's like, I can look at it. I can see exactly why it's happening and I can't do a goddamn thing about it.
Sure.
That's disheartening.
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
These are dark times, y'all.
But hopefully, you know, we can spread the good word.
Sure. So then we move on from there, and Jesus is like, here, let me explain the parable of the sower.
Okay?
Yeah. Each soil represents one of four responses to the word of the kingdom.
Yeah.
Anyways. Mm-hmm. So he does that.
Right.
Then we move on to talking about the parables of corruption among the kingdom community.
Okay.
And we get the parable of the wheat and the tares. This parable is super unique among all of his parables because Jesus explains this one in great detail.
Okay.
Like, you notice that there were some that went on and then some that were just like a sentence.
Yeah.
And it was really weird.
Right.
This was one of the ones that got explained.
Okay.
And that makes it a little bit more like we might need to look at it a little harder because he does explain it.
Sure.
So he says the field contains both wheat and weeds, and the servants want to pull everything up immediately. They want to get those weeds out.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But the owner says, no, wait until harvest and then separate them.
Sure.
So here's the thing. Those weeds might not be ordinary weeds. Like he's speaking to his crowd, right? And he knows his farm crowd is going to understand what he's talking about.
Sure.
The Greek word for these weeds is zizania or zizania, which many scholars think refers to darnel. And darnel looks almost identical to wheat during early growth.
Hmm.
And you can't tell the difference until it grows.
Okay.
You can't tell them apart literally until they start sprouting and blooming. So that detail makes the parable much more interesting because he's actually speaking to what the people understand.
Sure.
Which to us, like, we were reading through and we were like, oh, these are so simple and stupid.
Yeah.
But we didn't. They're still simple and stupid, but they were relevant.
He's crafted the message for the crowd he's speaking to.
He knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's doing.
Right.
The issue isn't obvious good versus obvious evil because everything is, similar, right?
Yeah.
So the servants can't distinguish between them.
Right.
So furthermore, there was an ancient crime involving weeds, which, we didn't know about. So, like, that makes it even a bigger deal.
Yeah.
Roman law apparently recognized malicious sowing of darnel in a rival's field.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, for Jesus's audience, the idea of an enemy secretly planting weeds wasn't bizarre at all.
Huh.
Yeah. That kind of makes it a little more interesting, right?
Yeah. No, they're literally speaking about things. This is relevant to what's going on in their world.
Yeah. So. It was agricultural sabotage.
Yeah.
And so they were like, yeah, those fuckers. And that makes the parable even more relevant to them.
Sure.
You know? And that's something that we would have missed and just oversimplified.
Right.
Right. So I appreciated learning about that. Like, yeah. Oh, okay. That makes it a little less silly.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
All right. So then we move on to that fucking mustard seed. Fucking mustard seed.
Yeah. This was.
It was like two sentences.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, what the fuck? So in this one, he's talking about the kingdom beginning tiny and then blooming into something enormous.
Okay.
Okay. So here we're supposed to recall what the expectations were of the time. The Jews of the time expected armies, revolution, dramatic intervention.
Right.
Again, that's why John the Baptist was sending his disciples to figure out, why aren't you doing something bigger?
Yeah.
Jesus is saying, though, the kingdom starts almost invisibly. You're not even going to see it. But here's the thing that we might have missed.
Okay.
The mustard seed reference was probably an inside joke amongst his listeners.
Okay.
Because the mustard seed wasn't like this huge, majestic, like cedar of Lebanon, right? Like, remember the wood of Lebanon?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And how that wood was spoken of like reverently because it was so good,
sure,
right?
Sure.
This shit was basically like a large, scraggly ass weed.
Right.
And so
I imagine it much like honeysuckle is here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just, a thing that grows really quickly and really mm-hmm. large and
but ugly. It's scraggly ass.
Right.
Okay. So ancient audiences likely found the image funny that the kingdom isn't like this majestic oak tree or whatever.
Yeah.
It's not this huge cedar. It's not a royal palace. It's not beauty and gloriousness.
Yeah.
It's just compared to a weed that
it's this everyday thing
grows out of control.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And so most scholars think that Jesus is intentionally undercutting expectations of grandeur.
Okay.
Like, he's giving a reason why it's not bigger than it is.
Right. This is a grassroots movement, bitches.
Yeah. Literally. Like, literally.
Or a mustard seed movement.
But simultaneously, the birds in the mustard tree are political reference.
Okay.
Like, There are birds in the mustard tree verses
sure.
that were mentioned.
Right.
That was probably a political reference because the image of birds nesting in a great tree appears repeatedly in the Hebrew Bible, the Old Testament.
Okay.
In the book of Ezekiel, in the book of Daniel, we see that a lot. And in those texts, giant trees symbolize empires. And the birds represent nations sheltered under imperial power.
Okay.
So Jesus is borrowing imperial imagery and applying it to his tiny movement.
Okay.
So it was political speech hidden inside this small nugget.
That's kind of cool, actually.
It is, yeah. Right? Like, he was much, much more clever verbally than we gave him credit for, yeah, as we were reading through.
Well, and we don't understand, like, these are not references that we understand exactly, yeah, in the moment, you know?
And that's what made researching this so fun.
Right.
Like, I love me a good literary reference.
Sure.
Right? Like a good dad pun or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, and that's what these kind of are, is dad jokes of yore.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So this is like a huge radical contrast, though. Rome is claiming greatness through conquest, whereas the kingdom is just beginning as this mustard seed.
Yeah.
So he was very much giving a political speech to farmers and like winking at them, saying, y'all know what I'm fucking talking about.
Right.
But at the same time, so that he wouldn't get in trouble if anybody asked.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Like, what? I'm just talking about seeds over here to the farmers. So then we move on to the parable of the yeast.
Okay.
Okay. It's actually referred to as the parable of the leaven, like leavened bread.
Okay.
All right. Or unleavened bread if you don't have yeast in it.
Right.
Which I didn't realize until I researched this.
Okay.
So another illustration. This is another illustration of corruption in the kingdom, because we get the parable of the leaven in the meal. So the yeast, which is the leaven, is one of the shortest parables. It's literally one sentence.
Yeah.
So a woman hides yeast in a huge amount of flour, right?
Yeah.
Eventually, all of it rises. And the point is usually understood as small influence. So she just put a little bit in,
yeah,
to this huge amount of flour. Small influence produces enormous transformation.
Sure.
The kingdom spreads quietly from within. So it's kind of...
So again, it's the grassroots movement.
Right.
Growing.
But it's also like what I refer to as the YAP principle. YAP, YAP, YAP. In Dr. Seuss, Horton Hears a Who.
Yeah.
Horton is this elephant who picks a like dandelion, and he's walking around with this dandelion in his trunk, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he starts hearing who's on the dandelion seed talking to him, and nobody else can hear because they aren't like around close enough. And Horton's like, guys, listen, there's some people alive on this fucking dandelion seed.
Yeah.
And everybody's like, no, Horton, you're nuts. You're crazy. Boil that dust bag. Boil that dust bag. Boil, boil, boil. The Havisham brothers are going to get them. The mean monkeys, they're like, you're crazy, so we're going to lock you up, you crazy fucking elephant.
Yeah.
And so Horton's like, hey, I can hear you, but nobody else can. You guys need to, like, fucking make some noise. Everybody all at once, make noise so that everybody else can hear you. Otherwise, these fucking monkeys over here are going to fucking boil your world.
Mm.
And it's going to be tragic because you're all going to die.
Yeah.
So they go like, okay, one, two, three. And then the entire planet like makes noise all at once, except for one child isn't making noise. So they're like trying to find out who isn't making noise. Come on, we got to find him. And they find him, and it's this one child. And so he just goes, yop, yop, yop. And it's like the one last final noise is what breaks through the atmosphere so that everybody else can hear.
Sure.
And so it's this, you could tell I love this analogy, but it's this analogy that every small voice matters.
Yeah.
Because it all adds up. Like, you know, every penny, like every drop in the ocean, you know?
Right.
One alone is nothing. One child saying yop all by himself is nothing.
Sure.
But it's just kind of a really nice message. I hate it that he's using it, but I love the idea of every voice matters.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Because they all do add up.
Right.
But having said that, so the kingdom spreads quietly from within is what he's saying.
Okay.
But yeast is often used in a negative symbol elsewhere in scripture. and it can represent corruption. So Jesus using it positively was very unexpected.
Okay.
And, like, turned everything on its head. So the emphasis that Jesus is saying is on the transformative power of the yeast. Okay. It can be used for good or for bad. And once yeast enters the dough, the entire batch, even just the smallest amount of yeast, the entire batch is changed. And so he's saying, likewise, the kingdom changes the world from the inside rather than through force.
Got it.
Yeah. So, I mean, all of these are, like, way more loaded than I realized.
Yeah.
And, like, I'm kind of a little bit impressed that, like, he definitely knew what he was doing. He knew his audience.
Yeah. I mean, I think that whether Jesus knew or not, the people that wrote this after the fact.
And that's what I mean. Sorry.
Knew enough to tie these things together and make this a message about things that were relevant to people at the time.
Yeah, definitely.
So.
Yeah. Then we move on to verses 34 and 35, which I will read. Jesus spoke all these things to the crowd in parables. He did not say anything to them without using a parable. So was fulfilled what was spoken through the prophet.
Ugh.
Quote, I know, right?
Yeah.
Quote, I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter things hidden since the creation of the world.
These were hidden since the creation. Okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Exactly. Like, they
sounds like a bunch of bullshit to me.
They weren't hidden. I mean, right? Really?
Yeah.
But that comes from Psalm 78.
Okay.
Verses 1 through 4 reads, my people hear my teaching, listen to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth with a parable. I will utter hidden things, things from of old, things we have heard and known, things our ancestors have told us. We will not hide them from our descendants. We will tell the next generation the praiseworthy deeds of the Lord, his power, and the wonders he has done. So
okay.
They just, like, read that and were like, oh, that's a good one.
Right, yeah.
Like, we can backfill
we
that.
We can use that.
Yeah. It's not very magical. It's like box checking. It's literally the least amount of work possible.
Yeah, no, they took a bunch of stuff from the Old Testament and they're like, let's make this all work into a new, like, we want to reshape this religion and we're going to make this work.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. So then we get more parables about the kingdom. We get the parable of the hidden treasure and the parable of the costly pearl. Okay. These are twin parables. A man finds a treasure. A merchant finds an extraordinary pearl. And both of the people sell everything to obtain what they found.
Right.
And the point is not necessarily about sacrifice. The point is about the value of what they found. They aren't reluctantly giving up everything when they sell all their worldly goods.
Yeah.
They're joyfully exchanging lesser things, material things, for something greater.
Mm,
okay. Yeah. So I want to know, again, why are there so many rich Christians?
Apparently that comes later.
It boggles the mind. It boggles the fucking mind.
Yeah. It makes, like, that aspect, like the
prosperity
gospel. Prosperity gospel makes literally no sense to me.
No.
I'm like, this is such an ugly way to look at what could be a better message, I guess.
You
know, like, the message is whatever people want it to be, right? Like, we've talked about that a million times. But these people have chose to believe that it's okay to be rich and powerful because it's called the prosperity gospel. We call it the prosperity gospel.
Yeah.
Like, they've found a way to allow themselves to enrich themselves through God.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so ugly to me.
And it's also how we get the parable of the guy born on third base, thinking when he runs for home that he, like, you know, already ran all the bases.
Right.
Like, you've not heard that?
I don't know what you're talking about, so.
Oh, yeah. Okay. There's this parable, I guess we would call it. I don't know.
Okay.
A guy born on third base, acting like he played the whole game.
Sure.
You know, I mean,
we see that all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
it's such bullshit.
Right.
Like, you don't get to act like you did something special, by just being born where and how, yeah. you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's...
Classism.
It is. Yeah. And it's like, well, clearly I'm good because I'm rich, and I'm rich because I'm good. And I'm like, that is circular logic, and you're an idiot.
Right.
And does it matter? I'm rich. I'm good.
Right, so yeah.
Obviously, I'm just a wannabe, you know? Sure. I'm just jealous.
Yeah.
Like, okay. So why are we using all of this treasure language? Matthew chapter 13 repeatedly emphasizes hidden value. So it's not the treasure itself as a shiny material object.
Right.
So this is about the hidden value, the hidden seed, the hidden growth, the hidden yeast, mm-hmm. the hidden treasure.
Right.
The kingdom doesn't look impressive on the outside, but its true worth is enormous.
The small mustard seed.
Yes.
The whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the recurring theme throughout this whole fucking chapter.
Yeah.
He's just speaking to all of the commoners and telling them how shiny and pretty they are on the inside.
Yeah.
And making them, he's verbally sucking them off. Like, literally to make them feel special, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So then we get the parable of the net, the dragnet.
Okay.
All
right.
And the disciples claim to understand Jesus's parables at that point. Okay.
All right.
So in verses 51 and 52, he asks, have you understood all these things? Yes, they replied. He said to them, therefore, every teacher of the law who has become a disciple in the kingdom of heaven is like the owner of a house that brings out of his storeroom new treasures as well as old. So this parable that we just kind of overlooked it because by the time we got to the end of the chapter, we were just like over it.
Yeah.
We were like, this everything in this chapter is bullshit and I hate it.
Right, right.
Your parables are stupid. But this parable contains a sly compliment to teachers or scribes or whoever fits that role.
Sure.
The chapter ends with what would have been a strange saying. Every teacher trained for the kingdom brings out treasures old and new. Or every scribe, depending on your translation, trained for the kingdom brings out treasures old and new. And we skipped right over it because, like I said, we were like, fuck this chapter. I hate it.
Sure.
But Matthew was probably describing himself, not Jesus, Matthew.
Okay.
Matthew's gospel constantly combines old Jewish scripture and new Jesus traditions.
Yeah.
And so the author is presenting the ideal Christian teacher as someone who preserves old traditions while introducing new interpretations.
Okay.
Interesting, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Matthew's like trying to wink at us from afar.
Sure. But I also like the gall to say that you have the ability to reinterpret thousands of years of God is pretty appalling, I would say, to some people.
Yeah. I have said this like every single chapter so far. Sir, whomst the fuck do you think you is?
Right.
Like I'm so offended on behalf of all of the people who have been following the Hebrew Bible.
Sure.
You know,
Like,
I'm not Jewish by any stretch of the imagination, but I cannot fathom how traditional Israelites and everybody practicing Judaism at that time, I cannot fathom how they must have felt so offended by this weird cult of let's do Yahweh different.
Right.
Let's start something different. Let's say his rules don't mean that anymore.
Sure.
Like, I can just imagine, like, my jaw open, you know, and going, what?
Yeah.
Like, what are you even saying right now?
Right.
Like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that would, to me, that explains why the people at the time would have been so opposed to this Christy thing happening.
Sure.
We had questions further about, is the kingdom of heaven on earth? Now, we asked that last chapter and answered it yes, insofar as what
they're talking about.
Matthew's talking
about.
Yeah. Matthew chapter 13 also strongly supports that idea. Most modern Christians would instinctively hear kingdom of heaven equals after death.
Yeah.
Or afterlife, you know?
Sure.
But that's not really how Matthew is actually using the phrase. For Jesus, kingdom of heaven generally means God's reign or God's rule. And it's not a location. It's like a feeling, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like a vibe.
Right.
It's a total vibe.
Yeah.
The imagery is all earthly, like has to do with like the mustard seed and the yeast and the wheat and the treasure and the fishing net.
Right.
And even the future judgment scenes occur after a period of the kingdom growing within the world.
Sure.
Whereas the kingdom is magical, but it's among us. Well, it's among like, the people.
I feel like at this time, well, all the way through the Old Testament, the whole message has been making a better Israel, right?
Yes. Yes.
And so the messaging always kind of comes back to that in that time, in that place, we're going to make a better God as our, you know, leader type mm-hmm. place that's here on earth, right?
It has to do with home is where you hang your hat.
Right.
We don't necessarily require the temple. It's about the people.
Right.
It's yeah. about the people. It's about the traditions. It's about how we practice our faith. It's about what we're doing to please our God.
Sure. And I feel like the only thing that really created a heavenly heaven, right? A up there heaven, whatever.
Yeah.
Is cynicism, really, because you can't, obviously we can never get there, right? In this life, nothing's ever going to be perfect. Right. So they have to eventually turn this into.
I need to get my prize somewhere.
You got
to
get your prize somewhere, right? The kingdom of heaven has to exist somewhere.
I may get trampled on and have cancer and broken bones and, you know, lose the people I love and have, you know, die of smallpox or whatever.
Right.
Like all of these tragedies happening to me have to mean something.
Yeah.
And there has to be some reward at some point.
Right.
And it must have been very soothing.
Sure. And at some point, it's like they stopped working towards creating it here on Earth. And they're just like, no, it's in the afterlife.
Yeah. Right?
And it, to me, it's very lazy. Like, okay. Like, we just give up here and we're like, we're going to die and then we get it. That's lazy, guys.
A lot of the satirists during the Enlightenment, like you get Candide.
Yeah.
Write about the laziness of this.
Right.
There's the reason why, or he wrote Candide. Voltaire is what I meant to say.
Sure.
Candide is one of my favorite pieces because of the satire in it, writing about this exact situation of yeah. laziness of thought.
Right.
Of womp womp, whatever, God will figure it out. Like, I don't have to do anything, man.
Right.
Like, I love Voltaire, but...
No, it's one of my biggest complaints today. Like, people are like, oh, it'll all be fine in the end. Like, they don't live their lives as much as they should, as fully as they could, because they're right. like, I worship God, I'm fine, I'm going to be... My reward is in the afterlife. And it's like,
and I'm going to see all of my favorite dead relatives there because they were all Christians too, I guess.
Right. It's somewhat of I can see how people think it's a beautiful thought, but like,
it's so
maybe
childish.
Just enjoy your time you have with them here and let the cards fall where they may, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't claim to have the answer, but at the same time, I'm not waiting to find out the answer either.
I'm just trying to be the best I can be, you know, right, the best me I can be.
Sure.
So the way that we read it, though, with the kingdom on earth,
yeah.
That reading is shared by many biblical scholars.
Okay.
So go us.
Yay.
In this chapter in particular, the kingdom of heaven is primarily God's active reign breaking into earthly reality.
Okay.
It's not people escaping to a distant, cloudy afterlife.
Got it.
We got it.
All
yes.
right.
Yeah. So then we bring the chapter home where Jesus teaches in his own country, his neighbors take offense, and the people of Nazareth are surprised that one of their own could grow up to do such spectacular things.
Mm.
Oh, I never saw that coming.
Right.
Well, get a little of this guy, huh? Remember when that kid was just like hitting a T-ball?
Right.
Jeez. Right. Jesus gives some observations on this. He's a prophet without honor. And he works no miracle among them because of their misbelief. They're like, just show us. And he's like, nah.
See, this is, yeah.
I'm like, okay, sure.
Right.
Sure, my guy.
Every time somebody asks him to show, he's like, nah.
Yeah.
I'm good.
And I'm like, okay, so you got nothing in your pocket.
These were the points where somebody might have actually wrote something down.
Yeah.
You know, this is where the camera came out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. So, I don't know if you recall, but I was so annoyed at the stupidity of these bumper sticker parables that I said that I would bring to the Q&A a couple examples of actual good parables.
Okay.
So I have a couple here.
All right.
All right. So let's read the parable of the phone battery.
Okay.
A woman complained constantly that she never had enough time for the things she loved. One day, a friend asked to see her phone. The battery was nearly dead. When did you last charge it? Asked the friend. Last night, said the woman. The friend went into the savings and opened the battery usage screen. Most of the power had been spent on apps running in the background. The woman stared. She realized her life was the same. The problem wasn't that she lacked energy and had no time for anything. It was that too much of it was being spent on things she wasn't even consciously choosing. Shit in the background. So the lesson is that what drains us is often not the obvious demands on us, but the unattended background processes.
Sure.
See, that's a good parable, right? Like, okay. All right. I like that one.
Right.
Okay. Then we get the parable of the algorithm, and all of my Trump-loving motherfuckers out there will love this one. Okay. One day, a teenager watched a bunch of videos about, say, makeup or, I don't know, anything conspiracy theory related.
Yeah.
The next day, her feed showed her more makeup videos or conspiracy theory shit, if that's what you're watching.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
She sees the next day, she gets a bunch of get ready with me videos and then brand ambassador videos and then product comparisons. And she's going down the world of makeup or, you know, conspiracy theory rabbit holes.
Sure, sure.
Right. Soon she believed everyone cared deeply about makeup or Pizzagate, you know, whichever.
Right.
When she stepped outside, she discovered, most people weren't thinking about makeup at all. Or Pizzagate.
Right.
Most people were thinking about entirely different things not related to makeup.
It's true.
Or conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Lesson, we mistake our curated world for the whole world.
Sure.
Right? That's a good parable. Huh? All right. The parable of the GPS. I love this one.
GPSs don't even, well, I guess we do still use GPS, but not like we used, you remember we used to have TomToms and shit, right?
Yeah, separate from our phone.
Yeah.
Well, and if you're going on a long trip, it is still decent to have a GPS outside your phone because your phone can get overcharged or like overheated.
I guess, but those old GPSs are kind of crap, so.
They are, but here's the thing, like my phone, I listen to audiobooks as I'm going to sleep.
Yeah.
And my phone will get really hot. If I let it go on for hours and hours and hours. So, yeah, I'm just saying I could see why somebody who travels a lot might have a separate device.
Yeah.
All right. The parable of the GPS. A driver misses a turn. The GPS just calmly recalculates the drive, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't make a big hoo-for-all about it.
Sure.
But the driver, he cusses himself out for like 10 miles. He's like, God damn it, I can't believe I did that. Now I'm going to be late and fuck, and I'm so stupid and God. But the GPS had just moved on, right?
Mm-hmm.
The lesson is sometimes we stay lost because we spend too much time judging mistakes instead of correcting them.
Mm.
Yeah, we should just move on.
Okay.
That one's less fun, but still I thought it was a little more relevant to our time.
Yeah. Yeah.
The parable of the empty chair. I like this one.
I feel like I've heard this one before.
You probably have. The rest of these are ones that I had heard. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. The parable of the empty chair. A company held a meeting to discuss customer complaints. The executives argued for hours. At the end, the janitor wheeled in an empty chair. Who's that for? Asked the puzzled executives. The customer, the janitor said. The room grew quiet as they realized none of them had considered what the customer would actually say. The lesson? Decisions become distorted when the people affected by them are absent.
Yeah.
And that's why diversity matters. And that's why we want, you know, black voices in the room and women in the room and people of all different persuasions in the room, because they add to the story and give you points of view that you never knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The parable of the starfish. You've heard this one.
Okay.
A man walks along a beach covered in stranded starfish. He sees a child throwing them back into the ocean one by one. There are thousands of them, the man says. You can't possibly make a difference. The child throws another starfish into the sea. Made a difference to that one. Yup. Yeah, yup. Right. Yup. Right?
Yeah.
The lesson is small acts of kindness still matter even when they don't solve the problem.
Sure.
The two wolves, right? The parable of the two wolves. Like, there's two wolves. One is greedy and angry and full of hate, and the other one is full of compassion, courage, and love. Which wolf wins? The one you feed. You know? That's right. That parable.
Yeah, yeah.
And then finally, there's the parable of the shopping cart. Okay. And that one is really long because I wrote a whole little story about it because I was sad. But it's basically like, take the shopping cart back to the corral, the cart corral.
Yeah.
Because it's not that you're going to get rewarded for it, but like what you do when no one's watching actually matters, you know, and impacts the people around you.
It's true. And to that point, and kind of off point a little bit, I really like Aldi and the way they do their shopping carts.
Me too.
You gotta put a quarter in to get your fucking shopping cart.
Yeah.
And then if you want your quarter back, you gotta put it back.
And what I love is when you walk up and somebody, you know that they either got it for free because somebody else gave it to them,
yeah,
or they put a quarter in and they give it to you.
Right. It creates like even before walking in the store,
mm-hmm,
it creates a somewhat good impression because somebody's maybe given you a card or swapped you a quarter. Like you've had an interaction.
And you,
not all the time, but some of the time before you even walk into the store, that's decent and good.
And you have, when you walk out, you have the opportunity to either pass on your cart or get your quarter back.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Or you could just choose to be a douchebag and leave your cart in the parking lot to hit other cars.
Which I wouldn't understand, but okay. Yeah.
Right.
Right. But there are also people who will, like, you know, homeless people will stand outside of an Aldi, mm-hmm, and put carts away. So it,
yeah,
like I've seen that before too, which I'm like, that's awesome. Like,
that is,
you know,
very helpful.
You know,
it helps everybody.
Yeah, it helps everybody.
They're gleaning the grapes,
right?
You know,
yeah,
I appreciate that.
And it's a great business model.
Now listen, we're gonna get somebody who is disabled or a mother of 10, and you know, just somebody who just broke their leg. Like, yes, there are reasons why you might not return your cart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No, obviously. Yeah. I'm not saying that if you don't return your cart 100% of the time, you're a douchebag.
Right.
I'm saying if you are able and you don't,
just do it.
You're kind of shitty.
Right.
If you are able.
At that place specifically. Mm-hmm. Like the other places, they have cart corrals. But put your cart in a cart corral.
Put your fucking cart away. Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
There's reasons for this, you know? Those carts get blown. They run into somebody's car. You just caused someone thousands of dollars damage because you didn't feel like walking 5 feet down to the cart corral to put it in the corral.
Right.
You know?
Exactly.
Just do it.
That's a good parable. I like that one.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. I feel like those parables kind of took us off track a little bit.
I could not end with such shitty parables.
Okay.
I needed to bring some good ones to the table that we could actually chew on.
I gotcha. So do you have any comments about what we did other than that, or is just wanted to end with some good parables?
Actually, his parables were not quite as stupid as I thought they were.
Sure.
So reading about them was kind of fun,
yeah,
and interesting, and lent a little bit more meat to them.
No, I appreciate the insight on them. It helped me understand them a little bit better and put them in perspective.
They're relevant.
It doesn't change my opinion of where this all comes from and why it's centered around things. But I mean, it's definitely good to have better context for where these ideas came from, for sure.
And why he was speaking, like, it wasn't quite as random as we thought.
Sure.
Like, it actually made sense to the people he was talking to.
No, in all honesty, it helps me put it into more of a political light,
mm-hmm,
than maybe I thought previously.
Exactly. So, yeah, exactly.
I appreciate it.
So. Yeah.
All right. Well, that was our Q&A for Matthew chapter 13.
Sure as fuck was.
And if you're listening to this, which I will be putting it out today, wait.
Today's Monday.
No, today's Tuesday.
Today's Tuesday.
Yeah,
that's Tuesday. What I said. Today's Tuesday.
If you catch this today, our live will be tonight, and the link for that will be in the show notes. So on our Discord, it's 10 p.m. Eastern.
The every link's in the Tuesday show notes. At 10.
Yeah, come join us because it'll be chapter
14, Little Maddie, chapter 14.
All right, we'll see you then.
Bye.
Hey, wife, I guess that's the end?
But husband, that's just sad.
It doesn't have to be. We are on lots of social media platforms like Twitter. Our handle there is sacrilegious_D.
For D's nuts.
Oh my God. Stop doing that. Anyway, we're also on Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest. There's a link to all of our social media sites at our website.
Ooh, we have a website?
Yeah, it's sacrilegiousdiscourse.com, where you can also find a link to our merch shop.
We have a merch shop?
Yep. We have podcast-themed clothing, mugs, notebooks, and more, as well as an atheist and science-themed products.
Wow, our fans should really go check that out right now.
Definitely. They can get in touch with us by sending an email to sacrilegiousdiscourse@gmail.com. But before they do that, we could really use some help.
Oh yeah? With what?
Well, it's not free running the podcast, and we need some financial support in order to get better equipment, which will free up time so we can concentrate on our podcast and our fans.
Okay, so what should they do?
Head over to patreon.com/sacrilegiousdiscourse and sign up as a contributor on our podcast. Supporters there receive additional bi-weekly episodes that we record just for our Patreon members for as little as $2 a month.
Also, we'd really appreciate it if you would like and subscribe on whatever platform you're using.
And Apple Podcast reviews help us out tremendously.
Like and subscribe. Leave an Apple review. Join us on Twitter. Support us on Patreon. That's a lot of instructions. Don't forget to say thanks.
Thanks.
Okay, bye.